Okay, is everybody about as comfortable as they're going to get? Yeah? Okay. Well, again, this is just a formal welcome. I'd like to just say a few words before we get going, and I'd like to welcome you to this, the very first of 307 Net Radio's candidate forum for the 2022 elections. Although I've been in Buffalo 20 years or so, I'm told that my British accent remains pretty strong. I actually have visiting family here right now, and they say that I sound like a real Yank. So make of that what you will. Many people I do know find it hard to completely understand me, and I know this is true because drive-up windows struggle to provide me with what I think I ordered. So you won't hear me talk much on 307 Net Radio, but I will say a few words tonight. Before we get going, I would like to especially thank Johnson County Library. Thank you to Steve Rosser and his team, not only for hosting these events, but also for so generously allowing 307 Net Radio to use their space as a recording studio and general meeting room. Thank you very much indeed. And also special thanks to Marcy Schuler and Aaron Palmer for their amazing contribution to this endeavour. I really couldn't do this without them. Many of you know that it was fairly recently that I took over 307 Net Radio from the visionary and ultra-resilient Mark Bentley. I'm so glad you could join us, Mark. Mark is beating all the odds in his recovery from a serious pneumonia that tried very hard indeed to take him from us. Mark, so good to see you here with us, looking so well. Thank you. It was Mark's brilliant vision that spawned 307 Net Radio, and I'm truly grateful and immensely privileged that he's passed it along to me. This work brings me full circle back to my earlier career. So what Mark did was conceive a way of creating a platform where people can quickly and easily find out more about the issues and decisions that are being made locally and affect all of us. It lifts the lid on what is actually happening in our community, whether it be local government meetings or interviews with community leaders. You get to hear it, unedited, unfiltered, on demand, so at your own convenience, wherever and wherever suits you, from your phone, your tablet, or your computer. If you can't get to a meeting or meet a particular community leader, 307 Net Radio is the place to keep aware and informed of what's happening in Johnson County. This is the place where you get to be informed and make up your own mind about what's going on, what you think about it, and if you want to act or not. I'd like to draw your attention to our brand new website, 307netradio.com. Right now, we're focused almost exclusively on election coverage, and we'll do so through the general election as well. But I have grand plans, and we'll also be exploring more issues and having more conversations about challenges and happenings in our community. So please drop in regularly. And if you have anything that you would like to hear more about or something you would like the community to know more about, I would love to hear. Get in touch with me, and we'll try and get something going. So everything that you will hear tonight will be posted on the website. It's being recorded, and you'll be able to listen to it on demand at 307netradio.com in your own time, at your own convenience, wherever and whenever. Anyway, enough of my accent. Without more delay, let's move on to the business in hand. I'm sure our candidates are keen to get going. Let's get to meet the candidates. The purpose of the forums is to help you, voters, make informed choices on August 16th. The questions are designed tonight to help you understand more about their experience relevant to the office they seek and whether they're the right person for that position. So, just a quick few words about format and rules. Okay, the running order for tonight will be Sheriff, followed by Clerk of District Court, and then County Clerk. Candidates are seated in alphabetical order at the table, and Marcy Schuler here will be moderating tonight. Candidates will be asked the same questions with timed answers in varying order. Candidates, I encourage you to be as specific as possible with your answers. Wherever possible, please refer to tangible examples rather than generalities. You will also be given a signal when you have 30 seconds left, and again when your time is up. Please respect the time limit. We don't want to keep cutting you off. And speaking of being respectful, anyone behaving or speaking in a anyone behaving or speaking in a discourteous or disrespectful way, excluding those under two, will not be tolerated, and I'm going to ask you to leave the forum. So, candidates, you'll have the opportunity to make an opening statement. Marcy will lead you through. Following all the questions, you will have 1 minute to rebut any of the answers you've heard from your opponent, and anything you may want to add that you may feel you've forgotten. I'd just ask you to save those comments until the end of the full question period. Following that, you will have a couple of minutes to make your closing statement and appeal to voters for their vote and why they should be voting for you. Please remember, and this is for all of us, that whilst that we have many people in the room, most people will be listening to the audio, so please just bear that in mind as you participate, and Marcy will introduce you each time, just to keep clarity for the listener. At the very end, we will have a brief question period, and I will just take a few questions from the audience. So if you have a burning question, I'll be happy to do that, and you can ask one or both candidates. And so with that, I'm going to pass over to Marcy.
Now, I don't know about you, but I could listen to her accent all day long. Oh, yeah, you sound like you're from here. All right. Well, welcome. We're going to start out with our sheriff candidates. That sound good? Good sound for us? Okay. All right. We've got Paul Kozacek and Rod Odenbaugh. Rod is the incumbent. So I want you first to start and just make an opening statement for us. You have 1 minute, and we're going to start with Paul. This goes in alphabetical order for this one.
All right. Well, thanks for all coming. My name is Paul Kozacek. I've been in law enforcement for 24 years, 22 of it right here in Buffalo. I was born and raised here in Buffalo. You know, during my career, I've worked in detention. I've worked on the patrol and in investigations. I feel like I bring a lot of knowledge of the county. I feel like I understand the residents, what they need. I've seen a lot of growth in the last 10 years. We're expanding all the time. I see there's a lot of different needs that are going to be coming up and arising, and a lot of issues that are it's going to take a community to come together to fix. So I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Paul. All right, Rod, the question is opening statement.
So, Mary, I thought the question was going to be, why are you running? And my wife asked me that about every 10 minutes. So, I want to be here. I too, like Paul, I think it's 26 years I've been in law enforcement, and those roles went from a bailiff to paper service, warrant service, narcotics, kid investigations, and I feel that this community needs a proactive law enforcement entity to keep control of what is currently coming in. Those things are like narcotics, mainly fentanyl. I push pretty hard on those things, the fentanyl and the child abuse stuff. And I want to come to work. So I've not thought about retirement. Maybe. So I'll think a little more. But I love going to work. We got a good staff.
Thank you, Rod. All right, this next question, we'll start with Rod, and you have 1 minute. What would you describe as your guiding principles to present-day law enforcement in Johnson County?
I think first is community safety, and part of that is what I talked about with the narcotics. We've seen, and it's taken a while to get here from the open borders, but we're starting to see the fentanyl, fentanyl is a scary thing. I mean, it's changed the way we do things. you know, you're no longer in the evidence room with bare hands and writing stuff down. It's a mask, it's gloves, and it's Narcan sitting beside you. So I think twofold. Community safety is one thing, and probably the other thing is, like Paul said, keep up with the growth. Like, we can see it's coming. And how we adjust that with our staff, that's probably going to be in the future, more staff members.
Thank you. Paul, what would you describe as your guiding principles to present-day law enforcement in Johnson County?
The guiding principles?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think community policing is a huge issue, or a good thing. I think you need to have a really good open-door policy, educate the public of what we're doing, what we're seeing, where things are kind of going. I think that's huge. Like Rod did say, drugs is going to be a constant thing, a constant battle. It's been a constant battle for our lifetime, and it will continue to be. Things change. It's, you know, keeping up with that and the community policing thing, you know, it's just keeping the public aware of what's happening, what's going on, what we're seeing as far as trends that are happening, and keeping that open communication line through to the public.
Okay, thank you. Question number two. And this will start, we'll start with you, Paul, with this, and you've got 2 minutes for this one. How should the sheriff's office be proactive in preventing crime, and how much can it only be reactive as events occur? So if you can use some specific examples. So how should the sheriff's office be proactive, but there are many times when you can only be reactive?
You know, that's kind of a hard question, because I think we do a very good job of being very proactive. We always have. I think, you know, we stay on top of things. Over the years, it's grown, you know, the drug stuff. You know, Rod and his guys have always done a really good job of keeping tabs on that. The crimes against children, you know, Rod and I have worked those cases for a lot of years together. We've been very well trained in it. We stay active in it with communicating with the school. As far as being reactive, you know, it depends on what the scenario is, but, you know, keeping the training up and keeping people very well abreast of the new trends and the deputies' new trends, and trying to figure out, instead of being reactive, but trained to be able to react to those situations with smoothness and effectiveness.
Great. Thank you, Paul. Rod, how should the sheriff's office be proactive in preventing crime, and how much can it only be reactive as events occur? And if you can use specific examples as you answer, that would help.
Okay, so the proactive part, I'll give you an example. Like, we do, whether it's a traffic stop or it's a, it can be a myriad of different cases. You know, a lot of times we can just set on that, do that specific crime that's occurred. But our team that we got going, I mean, we take the phones, and we gain so much access off those phones. The new program we got in place is going to, like, it's going to help us so much. We're going to be able to do that in-house again. We did it in the future. We're updated with all that equipment. And that, like, that goes with the dope case, narcotics cases. You could stop at the original delivery, but you just keep running it up the ladder. And that one can turn into six or seven. Those phones, it's about going after the warrants for the electronics, whether it be the phone or the computer. Like, so many things. An Xbox, for example, like, all that information is stored on there. So I think that's one way we're super proactive. Traffic stops is another. I view a traffic stop as an investigation. And, you know, sometimes it's a warrant. Okay, so I guess I better answer the other question. And what was the second one about being reactive?
Yes, and some things you can only be reactive as a sheriff.
Yeah, so when we get called in, like, it's, say it's a domestic, or it's a fight or whatever call that it's on. I think we need to be centrally located so we are accessible for the people, to get to those calls as quick as we can. Gotcha. Sorry. Just running my mouth.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. That's okay. So we'll start with Rod on this next question, and you'll have 2 minutes for this one. What are your views on present-day issues of increased alcohol and drug use? You kind of touched on that. Increased alcohol and drug use and abuse and DUIs. What is the right approach for law enforcement in addressing that? Two minutes.
So no tolerance on either. The collateral damage that comes with narcotics, specifically methamphetamine, is it's crazy. They say that drugs are a victimless crime. They're not. Alcohol is the same thing. You've got to be diligent on going out and making those traffic stops. You follow up on your ready reports. Those are report every drunk driver immediately. We get calls like whether it's somebody under the influence, and that's mainly like methamphetamine, not so much fentanyl, but meth makes people act crazy, and that meth use just opens the door to a whole bunch of other crime, and whether that's burglaries, assaults, whatever. But I think we are we've never stopped being diligent and aggressive on those things, so I don't see that changing at all.
Okay, thank you, Rod. Paul, what are your views on present-day issues of increased alcohol and drug use and abuse and DUIs? What is the right approach for law enforcement in addressing that? You have 2 minutes.
As far as for law enforcement, I agree with Rod, zero tolerance. You don't want to give an inch in that area because, they'll take a mile. It's a safety thing, being either drugs or alcohol. You know, as far as the sheriff part of it, I think helping build up preventative stuff or aftercare programs that can kind of help these people get through these tough times if they're addicts. I know there's a lot out there, Rod, and I can bullshit up here and tell you that we have interacted with people that are under the influence of drugs and alcohol, have arrested them. We're friends with them today. They've gotten their life straightened out. So you never know when that step that you take is going to actually change their future. And I think that's a great part of our job is to see that reward when you see somebody coming back that's been an addict for their entire lives, and they thank you for saving their lives. But you got to keep that zero tolerance approach, and I totally agree with Rod on that.
Thank you, Paul. This next question, we'll start with Paul, and we have 2 minutes again. How would you address the unique challenges facing Johnson County Sheriff's Office, given the large geographical area, the intersection of two major interstates, and a significant number of people just passing through?
It is a huge challenge. As we've noticed, the traffic in town anymore, you definitely don't want to make a left-hand turn. I think we've got a great rapport with our, the guys on the ground have great working relationships with the Highway Patrol, the Forest Service, Game and Fish, and working with those entities and setting up in the future doing some enforcement action. In the mountain, on Friday night, we got a ton of people headed up, and on Sunday morning, we got a ton of people coming through. I think you increase your presence in those areas to help that and cut that back. I think the relationship with the police department's really always been really good, helping them, dealing with the people that come through town. Our biggest hurdle in law enforcement here that I see is the transient population. As people coming through, staying here for a little bit of time, create a little bit of problems, actually hurt or take resources from the community, but you got to stay on top of it, and I think just keeping that good working relationship like we've always had with the entities would be continue that path.
Great, thank you, Paul. Rod, how would you address the unique challenges facing the Johnson County Sheriff's Office given the large geographical area, the intersection of two major interstates, and a significant number of people just passing through? We have 2 minutes.
So I think with the staff that we have and you know, right, like for example, right now we have two guys that are out hurt, on, and so it's a struggle to fill the spots in those holes. I think you need to be centrally located. Like, you know, if, and I don't even know the numbers, say 90% of our calls come within 10 miles of the biggest populace of Johnson County. And I think you got to do that. You know, we're going to more calls on the interstate, and I think we should go to those. The highway patrol are shorthanded, and I don't care if it's somebody from Georgia or Buffalo, Wyoming. If they're on a wreck on the interstate and we're closer, we should go. If it's my family, I'd want that. So, I think just respond to calls in a timely manner. Be where you can get to that call as fast as you can, because that's what people, 2 minutes to somebody is a lifetime. So, I think that, and just keep being aggressive on the traffic stops and things.
Thank you.
So I didn't get the 30-second one. So that was first?
Oh, you have 30 seconds, sir. Okay, thank you. All right. Rod, the next question's for you, and it's 2 minutes. How should the sheriff's office participate in keeping our youth safe? What are the challenges you see from social media and online access for our young people? And what can the sheriff's office do to protect parents and youth online?
I guess I don't really have an answer to that. I will tell you, I hate Facebook. I think specifically these, whether it's Snapchat, Facebook, whatever site that is, it opens the door for a kid to be a bully, and I think that they can say whatever they want without any consequences. And you know, we work some of those cases where whether it's a blackmail on a kid, where it's some sort of sexual image that goes out, and they think it's a 17-year-old boy and it's a 40-year-old man from somewhere back east. So I don't know. I don't know how we keep up with it, other than every time we get a call, we address that issue. I think one thing is we went to the, I can't even remember. Anyway, we went to a deal in Moorcroft where they had individual classes, and part of those classes, one of them specifically dealt with social media, bullying, sexual extortion, those things like that. And I think that's probably one way we'd hit the kids at school, set them up there with those classes. DCI taught those classes, super knowledgeable and really effective. So they gave an example of one kid getting a phone taken away, and then they open up that phone, and at the end of that thing, they had just about every kid's phone, because it was connected in one way, shape, or form. So I think that's probably, get out there, that stuff is happening and it's not going to end well. And when that image goes on the internet, it doesn't come off. So.
Thank you, Raj. Okay. Paul, same question, 2 minutes. How should the sheriff's office participate in keeping our youth safe? What are the challenges you see from social media and online access in our young people? And what can the sheriff's office do to protect parents and youth online?
Yeah, I agree with Rob. That's a monster. But the kids know more about the new apps and new things that are coming out than we do, more than their parents. You know, I think it's kind of an educational part with the parents and the community as a whole. The trends that we see talking with kids and learning these new apps and what they're coming out with, you know, it's one of those things that it's what's new on the West Coast doesn't make it out here for a couple of years, and then it's a new fad here. So, you know, keeping up with the trends that we're seeing nationwide, learning about it, and educating the parents. You know, my personal feelings, if you're the parent and you're paying for that phone belongs to you. Open that phone up. Watch your kids, what they're doing, what they're involved in. And, you know, it's a great tool. It's just kind of parents I've seen have just, you know, it's their phone. We don't want to mess with it. We don't want to invade their privacy. But that privacy, you know, could solve a lot of issues that they might be having, being bullied, or, you know, if they are taking nude images and getting those out, you know, like Rod said, those are there forever. They're never going to go away. And educating the kids on how important it is, you know, don't use the phone in a negative way, and reiterating to them that image that they're going to take of themselves is going to be out there forever. It's never going to go away. And I know you can really push that with kids, but until they can understand that. But, you know, it's educating those parents to understand what's taking place, what the trends are, and keeping them abreast. And like I said, I think it's letting the parents know they have every right to take the phone and open that phone up and look through it and make sure their kids are not getting anything they shouldn't be.
Hey, thank you, Paul. Paul, this next question will start with you. And we're on the downhill side of the questions. We have three more and then a little bit of follow-up. So, 2 minutes, and this is kind of a long question. The news report, the news is full of reports of school and mass shootings all across the nation. Reports coming from Uvalde, Texas, indicate significant failures across multiple law enforcement agencies. What have or what would you do to be ready for such an event? Are there any reassurances you can give the public? And what do you think can be done to encourage the public to recognize and report concerning behaviors that could possibly lead to an incident here? You have 2 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, you know, we had a TAC 1 training that was brought in by the school administration. It's a great program. You know, one thing I believe in is our law enforcement here. They're not going to wait. They're going to go. They're going to take care of the business. That's what we're paid to do. That's what we train to do. I think, you know, you got to continue that training, keep it up. As a matter of fact, that was the second training that I've ever had in school shootings. So we've been pretty delayed on that. I think there's a couple different types that they teach now, two different programs. Both of them are great. From what I've heard on the second one is similar. You know, I think, like I said, that communication and, you know, with the public, you know, if they see something, report it. It's easier to report it for us to go look into it, investigate it, and see where that threat lies. It, you know, a lot of people will say things out of anger. You know, especially kids, they get angry. They're going to say something. But it still needs to be reported and investigated. These kids are unfortunately looking, they get angry. Their only resource is to go out and think they need to shoot up a school or whatever it might be. You know, I think a high presence in the school during sporting events, you know, we're seeing mass shootings. It used to be all school related. Now it's just public areas. I mean, they're finding places that they know they're going to have a lot of people in presence, and they're going to do their deed. I'm hoping, you know, keep a police presence at all these activities as much as we can. We've always done a good job at it, but I think more so, I think we need to look at that in limelight, work with patrol, highway patrol, and the Buffalo Police Department and ourselves, and get to these events and showing a presence there to eliminate any threat.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Okay, Rod, you have 2 minutes, and here's the question. The news is full of reports of school and mass shootings all across the nation. Reports coming from Uvalde, Texas, indicate significant failures across multiple law enforcement agencies. What have or would you do to be ready for such an event? Are there any reassurances you can give the public? What do you think can be done to encourage the public to recognize and report concerning behaviors that could possibly lead to an incident here?
So I'll say that we're going to be there. We'll go in. That's easy to say, but I'm comfortable saying it. The Uvalde, Texas thing was embarrassing. I watched that. You really don't know how you react till you're put in that spot. So, yeah, we can say a lot of things, but I will say that we're going to go. And Paul brought up our TAC 1 training. I think the most important part of that training, Charles Oskey arranged all that. He put us in that grant for that class, which, and he included all of us. And the most important part was that the PD, the police department, trained with us. We got to get to know how people react, if they're going to turn right or they're going to turn left. And the more training we do with the PD, the better it's going to get. And we've started that ball rolling, and it's super been really productive so far. How we curb that is an SRO. Where that money comes from, I don't know. We can dang sure go to the schools as much as we can, and they encourage that. Though the county has one school, that's KC, and that's a whole different thing. Like, they're 45 minutes away, and we have Ken and Shane are the ones that are going to have to respond. So, like Paul said, whether it's a highway patrolman, it's game and fish, if we're training together, that highway patrolman is going to beat us there. Because they're driving a lot faster than we are. So that we can. We would like to drive faster, but we can't. So I think a big step is going to be continue that training and an SRO. And whether that comes through funding from the federal government, that's kind of where it's going right now, and we need to pursue that.
And just to clarify, an SRO is a school resource officer. It's the police officer in the schools, for those that didn't know. Okay, next question, we'll start with you, Rod. 2 minutes. So underpinning many of the challenges this community faces, and most often for law enforcement, mental health issues are at the forefront. This can be evident in alcohol or drug use, domestic or public violence, child abuse, and other crimes. What, in your view, is the appropriate response from the sheriff's office?
So right now, we are we're the landing spot for somebody in mental health crisis. They're supposed to be held in the least restrictive area or premises. The jail is not that. And we're often tasked, whether it's the hospital or the detention center, they're tasked with that. Neither one of us have those facilities. So we met VOA. When I became the sheriff, I was asked to get on the Northern Wyoming Mental Health Board, and I did. And the reason I did that is to help understand. Like, I was always complaining about it, and then I finally found out that they were just as overwhelmed as we were. There's the wing at the Sheridan Hospital. There's been some discussion about that. I know Bill Novotny and a bunch of other, Barry Crago, are looking into that funding for that wing just for that. We have WBI, which is a state-funded facility, and we can never get somebody there. And so we need a place to take them. We need a safe transport. The hospital's not that place. The jail's not that place. And to your point, sometimes we don't know whether that mental health crisis is drug or alcohol induced. So you may have 48 hours to figure out, or it may take 48 hours to figure out whether that's the drugs or alcohol are causing that, or they're just in a mental health crisis. So we're working on that. It's a slow process. I sympathize with the VOA, who is now taking over for the Northern Wyoming Mental Health, and we're working towards it, but it's not a it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Thank you, Rod. Okay, Paul, I'll repeat the question. You have 2 minutes. Underpinning many of the challenges this community faces, and most often for law enforcement, mental health issues are at the forefront. This can be evident in alcohol or drug use, domestic or public violence, child abuse, and other crimes. What, in your view, is the appropriate response from the sheriff's office?
Like Rod said, that's a monster of a question, and it's a huge, it's a society thing, question. It's a society fix. It's not a law enforcement fix. There's some great things going on, you know, like Rudd talked about, to help with that. Jail is obviously not the best place for every incident. And it's been a struggle now for quite a few years of what we do. Where can we get them in at? You know, mental health struggles with finding a bed. And, of course, if they're under the influence of drugs or alcohol, you know, can they go to certain facilities? Some they can't. But jail is, you know, like you said, the most least restrictive place. And sometimes, unfortunately, you know, they land in our facility when that's not where they need to be. I think that is a huge discussion to be having with the general public, with, you know, people that want to be involved in it, that want to figure out what can we do to fix things here in Johnson County for. There's no guaranteed answer. There's no guaranteed fix. There's what can we do to help curb this and get these people the help they need in a timely manner. And where do we go with them? You know, the shared thing, we have a wonderful asset. I mean, they're limited, they're full, and it's an unfortunate thing, but it's going to be a constant battle. And, it's, you know, as far as the sheriff's office, it's, you know, it's a great thing for the sheriff to be involved in and trying to figure out what we're going to do, where we're going to go with
them. Yeah, thank you, Paul. So our last question before we do a few wrap-up things. Both of you, this is going to start with Paul, and you have 1 minute.
Okay.
Both of you currently work in the sheriff's office, the elephant in the room. One of you will win and one will lose. What impact does this have on your team, and how will you create a positive and collaborative working environment post-election? And that starts with Paul.
You know, it's awkward. It always has been. Over the 22 years that I've been at the sheriff's office, we've had PD officers or police department officers run for sheriff. That awkwardness is always there. I think Rod and I have done a wonderful job of just keeping it professional. We're at work, you know. That's, we're there to do our job, and we're going to take care of business. You know, I think there's always going to be a little bit of awkwardness, but I think when it comes down to business time, we take care of business, and, you know, that awkwardness is gone. We just take care of it. Afterwards, you know, I think, you know, it'll just go well. I don't think there'll be any real major issues. I think in the past I've seen it, you know, it comes and goes. You know, people aren't happy and with some changes, but they adapt, and things continue on to be just fine.
Great. Thank you, Paul. For Rod, both of you currently work in the sheriff's office. One of you will win and one will lose. What impact does this have on your team, and how will you create a positive and collaborative working environment post-election? 1 minute.
So during our first interview, when Paul told me he was running, we had a conversation, and it was good. Like, you know, I told him that I assume he's going to tell us what he wants to do, and I'm going to tell everybody what I've done. And we shook hands and said it was going to be a clean campaign, and it will be. I hate those that are different. You can get your point across in a way that's non-confrontational and nasty. So I don't, like, win or lose, I hope I somewhere land in law enforcement if I do. And if not, that's fine, too. I'll spend a lot of time fishing. Like, we're all, like Paul said, it's awkward. You could sometimes feel it, but when there's a task at hand, yeah, that's not an issue.
That's good to hear. Thank you. So, both of you, and we'll start with Rod and Paul, and you may or may not want to speak to this. You've heard the other candidates speak. If there are any specific points you'd like to address or remark upon, this is your opportunity. So, if you have a specific point you want to kind of rebut from the other candidate, and then we'll move on to your closing statements. So, Rod, you have 1 minute if you have anything to say.
You know, not much. I'm proud of where we're at. I'm proud of where we're going. We've done a lot of good things. We got the IOP program, which has brought in a lot of money for the county. We have the Celebrite. We have the working relationship with the Buffalo PD. Like, I would venture to say it's never been this good. Sean Bissett has been so helpful. And, like, we train together. We're saving money doing that. Plus, we get to know each other and how we're training. We're doing the shoots on Fridays where everybody's included. That never used to be like that. I want to see how this ends.
So, great. Okay, and you'll have 2 more minutes to do closing statement as well. Yeah, that's sort of a... I know, that was really good. You can repeat that. Paul, you have heard the other candidates speak. If there are any specific points you'd like to address and remark on, this is your opportunity to do so. Be specific, and then we'll move on to the closing. And you have a minute if you want to.
I don't really have any thing to rebut against Rod. Rod and I have known each other a long time, 20 years, actually probably 22 years. As long as I've been here, we've worked together. I've got nothing bad to say about Rod. Rod's done a great job. We've done a lot together. We've worked together a lot of cases and solved a lot of cases. So, you know, I don't really have much to rebut on.
Okay. And Rod, we'll give you 2 more minutes if you want to add to a closing statement.
Yeah, I can do that. I mean, I can talk forever probably. Like I say, I'll elaborate a little bit on the IOP program and the money that's came into the jail. And I want to make this specific, like our IOP program this last year, which is the 90-day jail sanction that includes a counseling aspect instead of just jail time, that total between the split sentence, there's some infractions for DOC, those three things in the last 2.5 or 3 years, the total is $570,000, and that's a chunk of change. And when I go to the county commissioners and ask for things, that's a pretty good. I mean, we're bringing a lot to the table, and I want to see that continue. The federal stuff that comes along with it, fine. We'll jump through those hoops for that kind of money. They don't come in. They don't run our jail. It's things like asking different questions for a booking or cross-sex searches. Like, it's those type of things that we're already doing. So I mean, we got to jump through a few hoops, fine. If it's better for the county, green light. We're making money, and obviously the county is not had the money that it has. And if there's any way that we contribute to help that situation out, we're going to do it. So, I think that program helps recidivism. It helps the county. Like, it's a win-win.
Great. Thank you, Rod. Paul, you have 2 minutes for a closing statement.
Well, thanks, everybody, for coming. I think, you know, where I'm coming from is we touched on, we're working on training and continue in-house training. I think there's not only just with law enforcement, I think you got to train with our first responders. There's some great training. We got some great instructors here locally that can institute some of those things. I know probably everybody's heard I talk about training. It's a pretty important aspect for me. The other thing, you know, that I feel like I was raised to leave it better than when you found it. And I really want to push forward with the guys to get them well-rounded so they understand when they get a call that they understand how to take care of it, not just one focus on just one particular, which is great. We got drug people, but everybody needs to have a great knowledge and understanding of some of that stuff so they can handle those cases. I mean, I want to help build the future sheriff or future leaders in our county. And, you know, individual training with them, meeting with them, communicating with them. You know, if somebody says, I want to be the next sheriff, let's figure out what we're going to do to get you there. You know, I think you got to build those future leaders and let them understand your experiences that you have, the knowledge that you've gained. When I started, I was the youngest guy in both the Buffalo Police Department and the Sheriff's Office. Everybody else, at that time, I felt like they were all dinosaurs. You know, they were pretty old guys, you know. But, you know, I was a young buck. But, you know, I got to learn a lot from them, and I gained a lot of knowledge from those guys. And, you know, I can appreciate it more because they were great help and a great resource throughout. And that includes the highway patrolman and the Buffalo Police Department both helping me get through things. But at times, I was the only guy on. And You know, when you're 2 weeks out on the road, you get something crazy. You don't have a clue other than you're scared and you don't want to make a bad decision. So they were very helpful. So I want to keep reiterating that back for the future sheriff's deputies.
Thank you so much, Paul. We're going to move now to public comment, public questions, and Kate's going to run that part of this forum.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Very interesting answers to some tough questions. Sir, would you like to ask your question?
Does Johnson County Sheriff's Office have a solid incident command system so that we don't see the paralysis we saw in the fall?
So the question was, does Johnson County Sheriff's Office have a solid internet command system? Incident command.
Do you want to go with that first?
Paul, would you like to answer first?
Rod
is answering.
completely transparent, we don't. And so how I envision something like that is moving forward with that training, that's going to be set up. Right now, it's going to be all hands on deck. And whoever's working, whoever gets there first, whether that's PD, Sheriff's Office, Highway Patrol, Game and Fish, if they're first on scene, they're going to be controlling the scene. I'm going to tell you that we are a bunch of hard-headed males that are going to, we're going to want to go in. But you know, and oftentimes you see the crossfire thing, in which we had that during our last training. That was one of the things that was brought up. You know, that's just a small example. That's one thing that we dang sure need to do, and is I would view that super important.
Paul, would you like to make any comment to the question?
Yeah, like Rob said, we don't really have it. I think your incident command is usually the first guy on scene, whatever that is, or, you know, if it's a chase or whatever. I think that I've noticed over the years working with guys, it starts with whoever that had that call or whatever it might be, and then the more senior officer kind of steps in, it kind of helps and takes over and monitors it or helps get the resources that need coming. When I first started, you know, that's exactly what happened. The senior guy would show up and help me work through it, and he would take command, get those resources out there. Hopefully that answers your question.
Do we have another question from the audience?
Can I have one more?
Yes, of course.
So, you know, we tried. We actually had the TAP 1 training scheduled, and then COVID kicked us in the mouth. So we had to kind of backpedal and do a bunch of online classes. And I think the Uvalde, Texas thing brings to light how much more all of law enforcement can do. That's going to have to definitely be addressed.
Thank you. Do I have another question from the audience? Is there anybody who would like to ask a question of the candidates? Yes.
It's intensive. I answered first. It's intensive outpatient. So what that is generally, say, the Department of Corrections is overloaded with inmates, and in lieu of sending somebody to prison for, say, a 3 to 5, if they violate their probation, they do our 90 days jail sanction. That sanction comes with so many hours of individual counseling and so many hours of group counseling. And what that does is hopefully helps the recidivism when they do get out, instead of just cutting them loose. They have some sort of counseling that helps them cope beyond jail. Does that answer your question?
Thank you. I have time for one more question, if there is one. I think we've covered a lot of ground, but if somebody has a question. No? So it just remains for me to wrap this up and thank everybody for paying attention to these two candidates, and also to remind you that on 307netradio.com you can also read individual biographies and a few statements by each of the candidates, as well as hear additional individual interviews which go behind some of the issues that were discussed here today. So, gentlemen, thank you very much indeed for your time. So we'll just take a short break and then gather again in 2 or 3 minutes, and we will visit with the Clerk of District Court candidates. So if those candidates would like to come up and take a seat...